Money FM 89.3. Best of breakfast. Morning Shot.
Good morning. You're listening to Money FM 89.3. I'm Lin Lee. On today's Morning Shot, we explore the issues surrounding rice, a staple food for more than 3.5 billion people worldwide. Recent forecasts are projecting that the global rice market is set to log its largest shortfall in 2 decades this year. And analysts say that's a result of the ongoing war in Ukraine, as well as bad weather in rice-producing economies like China and Pakistan. With rice stocks and prices vulnerable to a host of external factors, whose rice bowls will be most affected by this global rice crisis? To answer that, we are happy to have with us Peter Timmer, Thomas D. Cabot Professor of Development Studies, Emeritus at Harvard University. Welcome, Prof.
Thank you. It's good to be on.
All right. You have worked with several Asian governments on domestic policy responses to instability in the global rice market. So how would you assess the current global rice shortage, and why do the forecasts look so grim?
Well, I think the starting point is the really bad weather we had last year. The spotty monsoon in India, you know, there was drought and real heat wave that took a toll on rice. The floods in Pakistan took a million tons out almost overnight. China had very hot weather in the rice bowl in the Guangzhou area. And so even before the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the rice market was sensitive. Now, I want to say over the last, I'd say, 10 or 12 years, the rice market has been remarkably stable compared with other grain markets, and that's a reversal of long-run historical trends. And the reason is after the 2007-2008 food crisis, ASEAN got its act together, and they really decided that they had panicked during that episode, and they weren't going to do it again. And so ASEAN has taken the lead in trying to keep the local, that is the Southeast Asian rice market, stable. But if you can keep that stable, you've got most of the world market stable. And so I've been following for a long time, but especially over the last several years, the progress that ASEAN has made as a group, obviously with Indonesia as the biggest consumer leading that. But ASEAN had done a very good job in keeping the bad weather in late 2021, early 2022, keeping that from letting rice prices get out of hand. The lesson they learned in 2008 was do not panic. If you panic, rice prices are going to go sky high. If you just take a calm breath, look at the situation and say, we can manage this with modest price increases. We don't need an explosion. I think the big question right now is, will they be able to do that kind of monitoring and stabilizing, given that the situation is just much more sensitive and dicey after the Russian invasion of Ukraine? That really did make the world look quite different from the perspective of a food specialist.
Let's talk about Asia Pacific, which consumes about 90% of the world's rice. So presumably, the impact on Asia will be greater. But which parts do you think within Asia are likely to be the most affected, and why?
Well, I mean, first of all, let's be clear. The impacted countries from a really high rice price are going to be in Africa. Asia's rich enough to be able to afford most of that. Some of the poor, East Timor, Cambodia, Laos. I mean, there are clearly areas where the poverty would mean high rice prices meant lots of hardship. But almost all of sub-Saharan Africa, especially West Africa, is heavily dependent on exports of rice from Asia into Africa. And their economies are already in conflict. They're out of foreign exchange because of the pandemic. And I think just globally, the thing that most people with humanitarian interests in this question will be watching West Africa. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. The big impact just in terms of numbers of people affected will certainly be in Asia. But Asia is pretty well cushioned. It has other commodities it consumes. I know everybody thinks the only commodity people eat in Asia is rice. But, of course, that's been transformed in the last 40 years.
Now, rice production as we know it is at the mercy of weather conditions. Given so much dependence on rain-fed agriculture, what would it take to help producers find alternative means to increase output?
Well, I mean, two things. One, obviously, is better irrigation and expansion, but better maintenance of the existing irrigation system. And interestingly, probably the biggest thing that needs to be done is good drainage, because there's so much of the rice areas that have salt intrusion. But the longer run hope, of course, is that rice will be developed that can grow in saline conditions, in estuaries, and along the seashore. That's already taking place in parts of East India. They have some varieties that are saline tolerant. But the other thing is then can we develop drought tolerant rice varieties? They would have to be heat resistant as well. There's some sense that that's in the cards. There is genetic variation out there that could be bred in. You're talking about 10 or 20 years before those seeds would be available, though.
Now, what other agricultural produce could potentially replace rice in the near term? Should there be a case of rice supplies being cut for an extended period of time?
Well, and that's an interesting way to put the question, because for the past year, we have been actively encouraging Asian countries to substitute away from wheat into rice, because rice stocks were quite good, and the Russian invasion cut off a very substantial chunk of world wheat supplies. And so very early on, China and Indonesia started trying to just gently urge more a return to rice consumption from the wheat consumption that's been increasing very, very rapidly all through Asia over the last 10 or 20 years. We could give up some of that increase in wheat consumption in favor of rice. Now that we've done that, of course, we're looking at an El Nino year. Indonesian rice crop, the February-March harvest was down significantly. We've seen the Philippines and Indonesia put pretty large orders for imports in that the market had not really been expecting, say, 6 months ago. I think the big question now is, will those new import orders trigger a significant price explosion, or will ASEAN keep its act together? I think rice prices are going up $50 a metric ton over the next couple of months. That would be a really, really good outcome if we can keep it at that. But if people panic, you know, you could see $300 or $400 a ton increases in the price of rice. I mean, I just looked at Vietnamese 25% brokens. They're $430 a ton now, and they're a little more expensive than India or Thailand as a source. But, you know, those could double if this gets out of control.
Are global rice stockpiles enough to go around to help overcome this rice crisis?
Oh, I know, you know, stocks. I just looked at the USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, and rice stocks globally are probably going to be at their lowest level in 8 or maybe 10 years. But they're still more than adequate if people don't start hoarding and pull those supplies into households and into the shops and places. If we can keep from panicking, there's plenty of rice to support a 2 or a 3% reduction in the consumption in Asia over the next 12 months. That would not be a major hardship.
Research has also shown that conflict accounts for a significant proportion of the food insecurity across the world. Based on your work with Asian governments so far, what can be done to ensure that countries in conflict have access to staples such as rice?
Well, you've got it right on your doorstep. It's Myanmar, and they're not out of the rice market, but boy, that's a really dicey situation. A lot of people in desperate condition. And so, yes, conflict is one of the main contributors to these humanitarian disasters. Almost always are local issues, local militias, and local answers. And so it's very, very hard for even an ASEAN. ASEAN's having a terrible time even trying to get the Myanmar situation calmed down. The conflict areas in Africa are just, it's going to be very, very difficult.
Now, from policy point of view, how can we go about preventing the current crisis from becoming a full-blown global humanitarian disaster?
don't panic. I mean, I think it's just as simple as that. Just don't panic. Don't go hoard rice. Mm-hmm. I mean, in 2008, I actually did the calculation. If every household just increased the 10 kilograms they stored in their house and just bought an extra 10-kilo bag, that put a 20-million-ton demand on the market that needed to be met instantly. That's why the price just exploded. It went up 200% in 2 months. If people just are confident, and here's the thing, is how do you establish the confidence among people so that they say, oh, there's enough rice. I don't have to go buy extra rice. The traders have to understand, if I put the rice in a warehouse, it's not going to be worth a whole lot more a year from now than it is now, so let's keep the supplies flowing. That's why the panic is so critical. If people think prices are going to double, they will double. Just to emphasize the point, the supplies are adequate if all we need is a very modest reduction in rice consumption, 2% over the next year. That's easily manageable in humanitarian terms, in nutritional terms. What will not be manageable is if we take a lot of that rice out of the market and put it in a warehouse or put it in the godown.
So you were mentioning that the rice prices are going higher and higher, expected to remain notched around current highs until 2024. Are we expecting to see spillover effects in other types of businesses?
I mean, what it's going to mean is if rice prices actually get out of control, then, you know, any firm with substantial number of low-income, low-wage workers are going to have to increase the wages to keep the workers fed. And that's the first and biggest spillover, is right into the wage market. And, you know, all of Asia depends a lot on fairly labor-intensive activities. And so the bottom half of the income distribution would be pretty severely impacted, especially if employers then say, I can't raise your wages, you know, I can't be competitive against that. So the big spillover would be into the labor market.
Very good speaking with you, Professor. We've been speaking with Peter Timmer, Thomas D. Cabot Professor of Development Studies Emeritus at Harvard University. Thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.